You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome into this Monday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. Me and Adam are recording this on Super Bowl Sunday before the game. We hope the game was awesome and that you all enjoyed it. And if you're a Colts fan, hopefully the Patriots lost for you. But we'll never know. You will know when you're hearing this. But Adam, are you excited for the game tonight?
I am not. For the one reason, as a Colts fan and as a non-Patriots fan, once I realized probably early November the Patriots won Super Bowl, I got really sad, really depressed, and said, I hate football. Let's move on to the NBA.
So you listeners that don't know, I am a Vikings fan, so I am equally devastated about this game.
Only the Vikings could be the team that gets an NFC title game, but it'd be disappointing because they lose the game before playing the Super Bowl. Only the Vikings.
We have a sad history, but let's talk basketball because I don't like football that much. And this is a basketball podcast, and now football's over when you're hearing this. So I hope you're not sad about that, but we wanted to just talk a lot of stuff this episode. We want to do some trade deadline stuff. We want to recap the back-to-back games the Pacers just played, and we want to do the preview of the first half of the week. So I think we'll jump into the recapping the last two games first. Friday, the Dan Burke game, Nate McMillan was out, and Dan Burke stepped in as head coach against the Charlotte Hornets. And the Pacers battled but lost, a close one. I don't remember the final score off the top of my head because the only thing I remember score-wise is that the Hornets scored 49 points in the first quarter.
Yeah, defensive specialist, head coach for a game. Dan Burke gives up the most points, I think, probably in regulation this season, 133 to the Hornets.
I remember Jermaine Johnson tweeted that in this middle of, or like 9 minutes to go in the second quarter, the Hornets missed their first 2-point shot of the game.
Yeah. And I remember when we were previewing this, you said, oh, it might be a low scoring one because Burke's the head coach. Nope.
I could not have been more wrong about that.
They gave up 37 in the fourth, too. So they had two quarters of 35 plus, which is just ridiculous.
It was ugly. Batum could do whatever he wanted in that first quarter. Kemba could do whatever he wanted in that first quarter. And I mean, everything was going in. Threes. And I know I just did the 2-pointer stats, but the threes were falling. You know, with Kaminsky, they actually had the floor spaced more than I thought. And without Marvin Williams, and they couldn't miss. Everything was going in. And like, at first, the Pacers were doing some bad closeouts on the 3-point line, and that's why they were either making the shot or being able to drive by. Then they fixed the closeouts about halfway through the quarter, and they were just making insane shots.
Yeah, the Batum game was eerily reminiscent of the Tobias Harris game from right before Christmas time.
Yes, I agree.
It was they would run the Hornets run a bunch of actions, and then somehow the Pacers all get sucked into the center, and then Batum would just be sitting on the wing for an open three.
Well, the one I remember is like I was getting frustrated about the closeouts, and then they actually had a really good defensive possession, and Batum caught it really heavily contested on the elbow, and he just turned and did a nasty fadeaway and just drained it. And I was like, well, this is not our quarter to stop these guys.
Well, by that point, he was on like a heat check mode.
He was.
But the idea is to not let the guy get to that point where you don't let him, and with an NBA player, it's 3 or 4 threes, they feel like this momentum, and then they'll take a shot from anywhere, like he basically did. So the key is to not let that happen, but they've done this so many times, it feels like, where they just like they lose track of one, the team's probably best shooter most times in a lot of games, and he just goes off in first quarters. I mean, this was reminiscent too of like the way the Pacers played basically before Vic got hurt for 4 or 5 straight games.
Yeah, it was crazy. And it was like everyone was bad on defense. Like the rotations were slow. You know, they couldn't stop the lobs. I know Dwight only scored twice, but like Michael Carter Williams hit a buzzer beater. Like it was all just a devastating quarter. The fact that I lost by 7 after that quarter was actually really impressive.
And honestly, it capped off at least like a week-wise, you're doing a workday week, of just 3 games where the Pacers probably didn't take their opponent as seriously as they should have in some sense, because I think they thought they were much better. I think they won on Monday and thought, oh, we kind of half played. We didn't play great, but we still basically, you know, it was an easy win. Then they go Wednesday and they don't take Memphis seriously at all because they're not, you know, Conley and Tyreek Evans in play, and they almost lost that game. And then, you know, they clearly didn't show up for this Hornets game really at all until maybe mid-third quarter, and they finally kind of got grooving and tied it up at one point. I thought, they're going to pull this one out of their butt again because somehow they'll win this game if you're giving up just a ridiculously terrible first quarter, but then they just ran out of gas basically.
Yeah, the fourth, they couldn't stop anybody again. You know, they scored 35. They actually were exerting a lot of effort on offense, but the Hornets did not want to lose that game, and they were putting the ball in the hole in the fourth quarter really well, too. And, I mean, Kemba and Batum combined for 72 points on 22 of 40 shooting. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and with the Pacers, too, some of the minutes decisions were a little weird. I think part of that has to be with Dan Burke being in the head coach and not McMillan, so he doesn't quite probably have the minutes down the way McMillan has with his guys. But I think they probably didn't play Jefferson because they wanted to save him for Saturday.
Al did play a little bit, remember?
He played 1 minute.
He played a minute. He got a billion.
Yeah. Well, I just mean that they obviously, like most games, if they need some minutes off the bench, they bring him in for 5 to 7, but they clearly were probably trying to hold him out for Saturday's game. Right. Young didn't really play that much, but then what killed him was Leafs minutes on the court. Basically, it was a -7. That's where they lost the game, basically. But it just was a little weird, just kind of the way they minute-wise, but I think you talked it up to Dan Burke being the coach for the game and don't really let it be an indicator going forward.
Yeah, and they shot okay from the – I mean, they scored 126. So, like, the offense was actually okay, 41% from deep, 50% from the field, 26-28 from the free throw line, which is awesome. But they just couldn't stop a dang thing. The Hornets shot 45% from three, 88% from line, 50% from two. And the turnover difference, you know, 15 for Charlotte, only 11 for Indiana. So it really just came down to them making insane shots.
I mean, the offense should have been well. They weren't even trying on defense. It's like a time. Like if you're exerting literally no effort on the defensive end, your offense should be awesome, which is basically what it felt like at times. That they just weren't even – they didn't care. But
right. Well, with a different head coach, you kind of could tell it'd be a different game, and I thought it was going to be the exact opposite of that game. So that shows exactly how much I know.
But I mean, you still have to give them props, I guess. If you're one positive, they did come back and tie the game up. I think they maybe took a brief lead for like a split second, maybe a 1 or 2 point lead. I missed like the end of the third quarter, so I remember them tying it up at one point. So you have to put some curtain on that this team can be down 20 and doesn't mean anything to them. You know, first, I mean, this would have been the third or fourth time this season, at least they've been down 18 or more going in the first half and come back to tie it or win it. So that's encouraging, at least, that this team really doesn't give up. But you can't give up 49 points in the first quarter. It's just terrible.
It was bad. It was really bad. But like you said, they weren't giving any effort on defense, you know, kind of saving their energy. And maybe that helped them on their second game of the back-to-back against the Sixers because their defense looked really solid on Saturday night against Philadelphia.
I think also it helps the Sixers also play it a back-to-back.
Uh-huh.
You could see it in some of the Sixers' three-point shooting.
J.J. Redick was blech.
Yeah, so the Sixers this time shot 10 of 32 from three. The previous time they shot 18 of 36 when they played them back in, I think that was late November. So that was a big – I mean, that's 31% versus 50%, which is huge in a game where they were basically tied close neck and neck the whole way to the last, you know, 6 minutes of the fourth quarter. Lance went off. So you could see it a little bit like that. Embiid played 34 minutes, but it wasn't like a really effective 34 minutes.
Minus 10, really, worst player on the team.
I have minus 20 on ESPN.
20, yeah.
He was terrible on D. I mean, Jefferson, who hadn't played basically on Friday, just was having his way with him. You know, I mean, there was a – you talked about that he had that spin move.
Which that was nasty. We got to talk about that. That was
– yeah, it was just so reminiscent of like Jefferson in his prime could do that to like big men who didn't know how to like who were weird stretchy guys. That's how Jefferson beat the stretchy kind of big guy, stretch the floor kind of guy. But
and like you wrote about and like Al told me in that practice, like the young guys don't know how to defend his moves like that. And Joel Embiid was like, I've never seen that before. Like this old dude just did this crazy spin move around me and had it was awesome. It was so cool.
Yeah, and you could tell. I mean, the thing about Embiid too is he's a guy who I think didn't play basketball until he was like in his 15s or 16, you know, years old because he's from – I'm blanking where he's from. But he like didn't really play basketball until he was later in life. So he probably didn't watch a ton of basketball when he was younger. Probably didn't ever really seen – you know, by the time he picked up the game and really got into it, he probably only had thought of big guys that stretch fives, you know, hasn't really seen some of the Jefferson, Tyson Chandler type of plays or even like a – maybe he's watched Shaq. But, you know, those type of guys, I don't think he's ever really studied those guys' film because he wouldn't have any need to. And so I think that's why, you know, Jefferson sort of came off, you know, it was a nice job by Millen using Jefferson, knowing that he could take advantage of it, come off the bench and sort of kind of shock him.
Yeah. And if we're talking about centers who had a good game, we also got to talk about Sabonis' effort in the fourth quarter, army crawling over Joel Embiid to get a loose ball.
Yeah. And the fact that he basically didn't do the ball that often. They basically kind of shied away from feeding him at all down low because I think they're worried about Embiid's defense on him, but he didn't seem to care. Like, you know, he's not the, I need to get 10 shots. You know, usually when Sabonis plays 32 minutes, he gets 10 or 12 shots.
Here's the most obvious reason you could tell Sabonis' role changed. He led the team in assists.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And part of it was because Turner just could not get in the flow of it. He got two fouls, I think, in the first, had to be 3 or 4 minutes. Then he got called for his third at the end of the first half, where he maybe like questionable. I mean, Embiid was kind of just like playing with Turner, basically just drawing fouls on him nonstop. Like he was getting Turner to bite in on him and then flick his arm up like the James Harden play to get fouls called on him. I mean, it was kind of embarrassing for Turner, to be honest, but I'll move on from it. But yeah, the fact that really they didn't really try to get to the rim, I guess, with Sabonis, with really young either. They sort of just tried to play on like the fray of it, kind of play on the outsides, and they got to line a bunch, which helped. You know, they shot 21-25 in free throw. That was kind of big. They ran the bonus a lot of this game.
Yeah, and to me, it's about the defense, though, and mostly. I mean, they only scored 100 against the Philly team that has some good offensive players, but, you know, the tired legs for both teams just weighed more in the Pacers' favor because, like we already touched on, the three wasn't falling for Philly. They missed 8 free throws. I mean, that would have tied the game. They shot only under 40% for the whole game. You know, I mean, their best shooting percentage player was Embiid at 47%. Justin Anderson was 1 for 2, but I don't count that. So, you know, not a good offensive game for them, thanks to some actually good defense from a lot of guys. So credit to the team for flipping a defensive switch from one night to the next.
Yeah, and for the Pacers, you have to talk about two guys, too, who played incredibly well. I don't know if incredibly well, but first, Bogdanović played well.
No, I wasn't going to tell you, but I was going to bring up that he had 18 or more points the last three games. Maybe he's coming back a little bit.
So I would agree with you on that. He is coming back a little bit. I think he talked about it after their Wednesday game where he finally like hit 19 points, I think that game, or 21 points after the free throws, where he's like
Memphis game. Yeah.
Yeah. Where he was just said it was January was a terrible month for him. Hopefully he's trying to get over that. That was kind of
a nightmare. He said it was a nightmare month.
He was talking to JJ. It was really, it was a really kind of good interview, I actually thought. But then Stevenson played really well down the stretch. Yeah. Stevenson closed the game out basically. And for the Pacers,
we were talking about that in the 8 points, 9 seconds group chat. Like, even when Lance just does his normal stuff, it just changes the game because it's so exciting. And like, it just instills confidence and energy into everybody on the court. And it's just game-changing plays. And there's a reason he was a plus 15. Like, he just was taking over the whole game in the fourth.
Yeah, and how many players in this league off the bench can, like, basically be the closeout, like, win a game for you? So, like, this is probably the third or fourth time this season Stevenson has come off the bench, played basically the entire fourth quarter. I think he probably played the entire fourth quarter or close to it, and carried the team to the win. You know,
play the whole fourth quarter, completely shut down who he was matched up on, hit 2 threes, make some awesome passes. Like, he was awesome in that fourth
quarter. Yeah, and he's done this a couple times now. He did it against Detroit early in the season, did it against Toronto, where he hit those, like, 4 or 5 threes in a quarter. So he's just such an asset off the bench when he can play it like this level, because he can't play the level he played the fourth quarter on Saturday every night. But when he does it, you know, once every 15 games, it's worth whatever you're paying him, because it's just there's not a lot of guys in this league coming off the bench that can do that.
He's worth more than what you're paying him when he's plus 15 in 23 minutes.
Yeah, but I just mean that, you know, you're paying, I mean, I get the salary, what is, like, I think he's making 4.6 this year, but it's just that, you know, we talk about how he can be a negative sometimes on the court and he can throw, you know, he's not trying, but those are worth it when you get the actual, like, he wins the game for you out of him enough. Like, it kind of counters out the bad side of Lance a lot.
Yeah, it was really helpful in this game, and especially against a young Sixers team who is trying to learn the game. When you're playing against a really unconventional guy like that, they don't really know what to do.
Yeah, and even though Stevenson is playing really well, I still don't think it means he should start. I think we talked about this a little bit on our show.
His energy off the bench is what makes him so good.
Yeah, we kind of laughed at it before the season when he was like the sixth man, how they were talking about as being the sixth man bench unit leader. Well, you know, while Sabonis is probably the theoretical sixth man, he really is more like, feels like a starter because he started 15 games and he kind of feels like he fits with the starters. Where Lance feels like he's the kind of guy where you can throw in, where he'll play with Leaf, Joe Young, you know, he'll play with Poitras, whatever, a lot of these like really backbench guys, and play really well, so kind of carry the team, or in a way that I don't think there's, like, maybe Vic's the only guy on the team that can really do that.
Maybe outside of energy, I think Lance's best skill is that he can literally play with everybody.
Yeah, he fits it very, because he can play basically any spot from point guard to small forward, because he brings up the ball a ton when he's in with the bench unit. He can guard small forwards on the floor, which is ridiculous for a guy who's like only, I think he's only 6'6", so he does a pretty decent job guarding small forwards, and then he can sort of just kind of fit wherever you want to put him.
Yeah, exactly. And you could see in all these fourth quarters, like you talked about, when he's so effective, it's because they're able to keep him on the floor when they're subbing in and out other guys.
Yeah, and this season he's become, you know, we also talked about this season where he's like kind of become sort of the Lance that we remember from the 2013-14 Pacers, where he was like just the awesome utility guy. I mean, I think he played a lot with the bench unit that year too. He started at shooting guard, but he was kind of the guy who they would leave in to play with the bench guys because he could kind of go 35 minutes a time to feel like he could, the energy like that. So it's good to see him come back because he's definitely playing himself. Definitely gonna get his option picked up next year. And I don't, I mean, he's sure. playing himself into really back in this league. I just don't know if we'll ever be able to leave Indiana after where he was before.
I know. They've resurrected his career for the second time after being a second round pick and, you know, on the fringes of the NBA, they've saved him twice. So
you hope that that would mean like a hometown discount, right? You would hope, you would think he would be like, oh, I'll stay here if you give me like 3 years at like $7 or $8 million.
We are far off from having to worry about that.
And we'll talk about that a little bit when we do some of our trade stuff to talk about future of the Pacers.
Yes, we're pretty close to that, but I want to hone in on two guys that we already briefly mentioned, but I just want to focus a little more. We already, you know, maybe not his best game of the season, but top five best games for Al Jefferson in a Pacers uniform. You know, 4 of 6 from the field. That spin move just brought life to the team. 9 points was his fourth highest of the season. Made his free throw. I just really liked what he gave up there. 2 steals was a season high too. So we have to give credit to him when it's due because, you know, he doesn't play every game, but when he does recently, he's been super effective.
Yeah. I wrote about him. You gave me the assist on that with some nice quotes from a presser or a practice media opportunity. But Jefferson, you know, this year has been really good at – he's, like, been effective at using kind of the low post skills that nobody in the NBA really uses anymore, where he comes in and he can – you can feed him 3 or 4 straight times and basically guarantee he'll get you 4 to 6 points. And it's – that's an asset. I mean, you know, there aren't a lot of guys you trust on the Pacers bench really just to come up. Like, you don't trust a guy like Leaf too, where you can, like, just keep feeding the ball. Yeah, Jefferson's defense is not great and it's a huge liability.
It's awful.
But it – there is some value in the fact that you can say, hey, we're going to bring in, you know, our entire bench and we're just going to run complete plays. We're going to clear out the entire side, Isaac Jefferson on the top of the key and let him back the guy down, do some kind of move, whatever it is. And so it just has value still. It doesn't have the $10 million salary value he's making, but it has, you know, a veteran minimum value if that's what he's on.
If he shoots 4 of 6, his bad defense isn't as big of a deal. So yeah. That's what you got. You're right. If he's doing his thing on offense, his defense is manageable.
I would also love if he would just tweet or it's probably an Instagram, I don't know, or something of a picture of when he spin moved Joel Embiid. You know how Embiid loves when he loses or whatever to post pictures like when he dunked on Westbrook. It's like, well, Embiid, you lost, so get over it.
I guess we should say this too. I never got to this. We talked about how big it was for them to beat the Sixers and stay in the season series. That was a huge win.
Yeah, it was. And they've got a couple big ones coming up we'll hit later that are also going to be huge Monday, specifically against the Wizards.
The other guy I have to – you know I have to talk about him. Last 3 games – Bojan is 9 of 19 from 3. He shooting over 50% from the field over those 3 games. He has almost 60 points, so hopefully he's rounding back into form. I don't want to get ahead of myself because it's only been 3 games, but hopefully he's rounding back into form.
Yeah, knock on some wood, pray, whatever you got to do. Hopefully, because if he doesn't, you know, I've noticed really since Vic got back, he's been kind of lacking from 3-point range. I think part of that has been that Bojan has been so bad that didn't space the floor the same way he did before Vic got Vic was hurt. And so, you know, if Bojan get back to shooting 4 from 7 every night from 3 or close to that, then teams will start respecting him again. That will create a little more space once again for Vic, who I think is an incredible 3-point shooter, but needs a little more space than a guy like the most people just because he's a smaller guard. So you just got to hope, because if Bojan is shooting 4 of 7, this team, you know, they can reach a level I don't want to say Eastern Conference Finals level, but they can win a first round series, maybe somewhere around there.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, he's a +6 in that Memphis game when he was shooting really well. And, you know, he was a plus in the Charlotte game, even though they stunk, and he was a slight negative in the Philly game, but his shot is just so huge for the offense to stay rolling. So really hope that this can stay around, and he's making his free throws. So his offense looks better than his awful run of play recently.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe it was just as easy as turning the month. I mean, you know, maybe it's a mental thing for him. And, you know, it's not a bad time if he starts getting hot February, maybe into March. You know, if he gets, you know, we saw with Solomon Hill a couple years ago where you don't have to be great all year, but if you're hot for 2 months, it's incredible asset to the team.
It is. And, hopefully that happens in the playoffs especially.
Yeah, if he is the Bojan we saw in November – in the playoffs, I mean, there's a ceiling this team can reach, which is, you know, the East is more wide open than it's ever been. And there's a possibility they could be interesting, at least for a couple of the top teams.
Sure is. And maybe they'll have some different talent on their team for those games, because the trade deadline is in 3 days from when you're listening to this. It is Thursday at 4 p.m. So Adam and I want to get in to some of the guys we think could be tradable for. Adam, who did you come up with? Who's your first guy? Or actually, how do you want to do this? How do you want to sort through this? Do you want to go guys you want to acquire? Do you want to do cap stuff? Do you want to do guys that could be traded away? How do you want to do this?
So, first of all, we have to say this is the much anticipated trade deadline preview from the Locked On Patriots. We've been hyping this up. I know we've been hitting trades up, but this has been, we've been hyping this up. So this is, you know, I know all you guys out there have just been waiting for us to do this. So I think, you know, maybe we should go position by position, because I was looking at trade deadline and into free agency this summer, because I think they go hand in hand, and it's kind of a good time where you have a really good cap sheet. So you're real, like, I can throw signings, whatever, you can do a really good job of figuring out if they'll fit or not. So I think maybe we should touch, I'm gonna go that direction instead of just like guys, because I think we might be underwhelmed on the trades they'll make.
Yeah, I don't know if they'll make any, to be honest. I mean, we heard the Collison rumors, and it sounds like they're not really interested, and we don't know what the Nuggets offered, but you know, that makes it harder to predict. But stuff like that makes it like makes me think it'll be more likely than not that nothing happens, but you don't really know.
Yeah, so we can start there, though. I guess if they were offered a first-round pick, is Collison worth trading? It's iffy, right, depending on the pick?
Yeah, because, well, if you want to have him for a year and a half, like if they keep him next year, probably not, because a year and a half of a really good – he's been really good for them, so I'm going to say really good. A year and a half of a really good point guard is probably worth a bit more than a really late first, but if they don't plan on keeping him into next year, then maybe not, so – that's another front office call there, but that's pretty close value.
Yeah, he's played himself into the option. He's been great this year. I mean, I think he's been offensively a top 10 point guard. I mean, it's been extremely underrated how good he's been for the offense. Yeah, he's not like scoring 20 points a game, but his efficiency and his ability to direct things and his like PR or whatever is off. I mean, it's off the charts among point guards, but I would agree with you. The only question is, I mean, like if you could get off him without taking on like big new salary, that might, like, I think with Denver, the issue is that you have to take on one of Denver's salaries to match, and they don't have the right expirings for it to work out well. So you end up with some version of like a guy. I think, what is Arthur, have 2 more years left, or Chandler,
Arthur, Kenneth Fareed, Chandler.
Yeah, yeah. End up with these guys who you don't really want on your books, because you would rather have the cap space than have those guys, really. But and especially if, I mean, you're picking up Collison option next year at this point, unless he just falls off over the next 2 months, you're picking it up because he's worth more than $10 million. The only question is, if you get the, like, let's say Denver picks 15 or 14 or 16, somewhere around there, is there a way to package your first rounder, say at 20, with that one to get a higher draft pick that could be valuable in 3 years? And that's the only thing you have to look at is that, because remember, you know, I think it was the Kings who traded to the Jazz for the 15 and 16, the 10th pick that got Donovan Mitchell. Now the Kings are an incompetent franchise. So who?
It was the Nuggets.
It was the Nuggets traded away?
The Nuggets were on the clock at 13, and they took 24 and Trey Lyles for 13. And that's
why didn't it was the Kings that did that?
The Kings draft night trade was 15 and 20 for their 10th pick, and then Portland picked Zach Collins with 10, and they got Harry Giles and Justin Jackson.
Also an incompetent trade. So,
no, but that was good for the Kings. That was good.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll figure it out. Well, let's get back to, I guess, let's go back to what we're talking about, not about the Kings. But yeah, that's what I'm saying is, well, the Nuggets clearly blew that there because they needed a point guard really badly. But that's the only thing you got to think about is, can you do something like that to move up and try to get? Because I think looking to the future wise, the Pacers really, they need a point guard and they probably need a small forward. You're probably set at, you know, at least starting wise, at power forward, center, and shooting guard for sure for the next 3 years. And then it depends where you rate Robinson right now. That's kind of like where the team looking at least 3 years from now. So there's, and I'm not sure where the line is drawn on really good point guards in the draft. I know Colin Sexton and Trey Young are the top two, but those guys might go in the first five, so it might not matter.
Yeah, they're top 7-8 guys. So, and I don't think that.
Yeah, they can get there.
I don't think the Nuggets pick and the Pacers pick would get you high enough in the draft on a trade to get up to Sexton. So,
no, it'd have to be like, I mean, maybe like a Sabonis with those two picks could get you there, but that's maybe. I mean, that's, teams love the potential of young point guards.
Exactly. So that's hard. And that is why I'm going to throw out my first guy here who's actually still right now in the NBA that I would like to trade for.
All right.
It's here. A point guard. And I have to shout out Alex Golden on Twitter for actually being the first guy I saw mention this idea, and I love it. Patrick Beverley.
All right, so I'm going to pull up his numbers. Tell me.
Speaking about $5.5 million with a partial guarantee next year of an amount that I cannot remember.
All right, I'll pull up his salary. But
so he's out for the year this year, and I understand that that sucks. But he would be so helpful next year.
So you're basically thinking they could probably steal him, right, for what's like a feasible trade? Let's put it that way.
That's the challenge. I don't know. Their point guard play is Miloš Teodosić. And I don't know. You probably have to do Corey Joseph if you did it. But I think Beverly would be more useful than Joseph next year. And if you didn't include Joseph, I don't really know what the package is.
So Joseph would make sense because if you're the Clippers and if what has been said is true, basically they don't want to go into a full rebuild. They want to basically clear a bunch of cap space, have a nice set of like guys that people want to play with around and bring in a bunch of big name free agents. That's their 2 to 3 year plan right now, probably. So that would make sense because Joseph is probably a guy that team players wouldn't mind playing with. He's, you know, he's been on a lot of good NBA teams. He's been on the Spurs. He's been on the Raptors. So that would make sense. I'm just not sure, you know, you get Beverly, you're not paying him a lot, so it's not a big deal, but, you know, if he's hurt, you know, what kind of level you're getting him at? Are you sure he can return? And then if you have like a first-round pick, that's probably not worth it. If you can just give up Joseph for him straight up, that's probably still also not worth it. So that's kind of where you get into like a tricky situation.
Yeah, Joseph might be too much. I don't know. I just love the way Patrick Beverly would in theory fit on this team.
Oh, I agree. I think he'd be great. I mean, he would fit the Joseph role, but be a better defender.
Yeah, and you know, if you could roll him out like they do with Collison and Joseph now, right? Like they just interchange him for every situation, and I think Beverly could be, you know, in that Joseph role pretty well too. And he's a scrappy guy, but the only difference is one, he's $3 million cheaper than Joseph next year if Joseph opts in, and two, he's team control instead of player control. So,
yeah, but. The thing is, if you trade for him for Joseph straight up, you're basically saying, oh, we don't care about, you know, you're sacrificing a playoff run, which, yeah. Like I said, the East is more open than it ever been. And I'm not sure the patient doesn't think they have a shot at winning one or two series, like exactly. The way the team is constructed currently.
Yeah. And it's really a pipe dream because I would just love to have him, but it's hard to construct the right package for him.
I mean, maybe he's the kind of guy you can get in the offseason in some kind of weird trade, depending on how you value draft pick or something at that point. You know, the thing about the NBA is you either have to have one of the best, like, guard offensive-wise, like a Westbrook, Harden, Curry, or you have to have a really good defending point guard to be able to win, and that would, you know, that would Beverly do. He'd be able to go against a guy like Kyrie or Kyle Lowry for thinking to how you win the Eastern Conference. Those are the two guys you have to really beat over the next 3 years.
Right, and they could take Beverly's money into space right now, too, barely. So, you know, if they just want to give up, like, 2 seconds for him, they could do that. There's a lot of options, but I don't know if they get it done. It's just me. Shooting off the first guy to get the discussion rolling here.
That I think that would be really interesting. If they gave up two seconds, that might be worth it just because you're just saying, hey, we'll take on Nurse Vassal this year because I know he's not going to play. And we'll, yeah, that's it definitely messes with their point guards looking forward because, you know, you look at it, they got Collison on team option, they got Young on a team option, got Joseph on a player option. But if you look at the market, Joseph probably gonna opt in just because
so in my dorky cap theory for next year I have him opting out, but it's really close.
So here's how I looked at it is he's still relatively young, so if he opts in he can still get a long-term deal in 2 years as long as he's healthy, which he's hasn't really had a history of injuries, and you know he probably wants what 8 to 10 a year, give or take. That's probably what he's looking at.
Yeah, so if he thinks he could get $8 million over 4 years this offseason, I think he would opt out just for the security.
So, but the problem is there aren't a ton of teams that have the cap space to offer.
Every team has the MLE, which is.
Oh, yeah. But I'm not sure. So. I'm not sure he will get a four-year deal. But I think if he was to opt in and let's say, you know, another season the Pacers do well again, he might be able to get $10 million a year over 3 or 4 then.
So I just think of it like this. Like, you know, PJ Tucker just got that 4-year full MLE offer with the Rockets because he's a defensive specialist guy who can be useful in the playoffs. And I think Joseph's kind of in that mold, too, of a team that could use him in that variety.
So then but then the Pacers could also just do that. They could just sign him.
Exactly. They have the bird rights to keep him anyway. So I think that Joseph's agent will be smart enough to know, okay, if we get this offer elsewhere, the Pacers will just keep us.
Yeah. So maybe that's probably what it is. But what I'm saying is he probably doesn't I was kind of thinking he probably doesn't leave, but I guess you're thinking
I agree with that. I don't think he ends up leaving.
Yeah, I don't think he ends up leaving. So then you kind of end up you don't need 3 point guards. That's too many. I guess Joseph plays kind of a hybrid shooting guard now, so I guess you could still play him. But if you end up, then you basically have to say, well, we'll take on Beverly and get rid of Collison.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, more with this trade that I'm looking for is kind of how the Pacers look to the future and how they make moves. So, like, they basically have – they have three guards. They've got two shooting guards for the next, you know, looking forward. But the really where they're weak is at small forward, but there's not really any available small forwards. Their best move is bringing Robson is. But I wonder, though, you know, I know Bradley can't be traded right now, but I wonder if they go out from the offseason or a Trevor Ariza even. Well, it has to be, like, straight up. It's a weird
– Yes, it has to be just Avery Bradley you get in return.
Yeah, but then I'm looking towards more like the offseason is, I think, an Avery Bradley or Trevor Ariza type of guy the Pacers could go after just because it seems like those guys would be cheap enough to fit in. He'll be a free agent, and I'm assuming the Rockets are going to try to clear enough space to be able to bring in LeBron.
Yeah. Wow. Ariza was bad at the beginning of the year, and he's bounced back. So age is a factor for him, but he would be a good fit. That's a good one.
He would be – so, you know, he would be also probably relatively cheap. He would be a two-year 20 kind of deal maybe, something like that. With a play, you know, same kind of contract Collison's on and Bojan's on.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I would like Trevor Ariza quite a bit.
So my one question to you really is really about Bojan. So if Robinson comes back to some level, Bojan is probably out, right? Just because if Robinson, if you can get Robinson for the, let's say, $8.5 million a year, which is what Bojan, if you cut him, is the money you save, you probably do that, right? You don't bring both back.
In my cap theory, I have Bojan off the team.
Then if he's going to be off the team.
So listen to this too. So even if they decline his option, they have his non-bird rights, which they could just re-sign him for the same money. So, and it wouldn't cost cap space.
Oh. Okay. So that, because he wanted that kind of threw at you. You see all these rules, you know, I don't know if you threw a wrench in my thought, but I guess then. He wanted 3 years, 50 last year. That was what I was looking for, and I was going to get it, and I'm not sure.
Hilarious. Absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, I just right now, the way the team is constructed, I just don't see them making a move at this trade line, to be honest. I think the moves are going to come in the offseason, and it's whether it's like Thad Young, something like that. I mean, you see any ability that Thad Young has traded for something? Like I don't really see a huge market for him out there.
So the Apple bites for me that they would make are – like Aaron Gordon is suddenly they're being shopped. Like if they could get Aaron Gordon, I think they would do it. Guys like that. And Will Fur just wrote a really good piece about second contract guys. And there are a couple of them, Dante Exum, you know, guys like that, that maybe they could get on the cheap or young. I think they would do that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But how much money is going to cost Aaron Gordon to re-sign?
Who cares? He's good and young.
Yeah. But like, you don't want to pay him like $25 million a year if you have to pay Sabonis and Turner.
Restricted.
Well, what's the max you can get offered by a team?
No one's going to pay him $25
million. What do you think his salary is? I mean, I think $25 is a little ridiculous, but
I bet he gets like 4 for $70.
That's still a lot, though. You're still paying. Then you're paying what?
Who cares?
At a position where then you have to get rid of Young or Thad because you're can't have that. You have four guys playing kind of the same positions.
Oh no. He's better than Thad.
Yeah, but what's going to cost it, Gordon, a first rounder probably?
Yeah, who cares? He's worth it.
Yeah, I don't know because you're looking. I guess I mean he does fit the timetable for 3 years from now. That's the timetable.
He's talented.
Yeah,
and he fits a position of need.
Yeah, so if you get him this year for a first rounder, but then you worry about how much money you have to pay next year because Thad will probably Thad's opting in.
I am not worried about paying money next year at all.
Okay. You're not worried about, I guess.
But if you have a restricted free agent with full bird rights, I'm not worried at all.
All right. Even if this team has to pay above the number, I guess that might be the right one, but what's his market right now?
I don't know. And I don't know if they're actually looking to trade him or if they're just trying to retool because their young core sucks and they have a new front office, but I mean, he'd be fun to get, but I was kind of thinking guys of that mold, like him, Exum, you know, Moody, like guys who are on the end of their rookie deals who could be cheap to re-sign because they're going to be restricted free agents but won't take much to get.
Yeah, that's what you need to do is do that at point guard because that's the problem with the Pacers right now. If you look 3 years down the line, how do they get are good enough to win the Eastern Conference? And they need a better point guard. They just need an elite-level point guard, and there's like two ways to do that is to sign one free agency or draft one right now unless he would hit on some guy that peaks late.
Yep.
And maybe Exum is that. I think a lot of with Gordon, though, you'll be giving up basically a first-round pick, which you could use on a point guard, which, it's a flyer still. But let's say, like, Duke's Trayvon Duval is out there. He's was projected to be one of the best point guards the season started. So that's a possibility. And you're basically saying, well, we'd rather pay Gordon, who is not, is good. He's good. Not going to like make us extremely better for $17 million versus taking a flyer on a guy like Duvall, who could become a great point guard. It's like,
yeah, Duvall's shot has been atrocious.
Yeah. But
he would be, he could be good in the NBA. For
but
sure.
You know who's also shot was pretty atrocious. I think his first couple years in college. I think Donovan Mitchell was pretty terrible too. So yeah. I mean, just saying, there are examples. You never know.
NBA shooting coaches are a lot better than college shooting.
Yeah, and in college they don't. You know, sometimes you want to take the most, I think, talented guy in college, because in college the guys are sometimes like they're partying half the time, or they're not. You know, it's college. They're not. There's not a job to them yet. You know, once they come to the NBA, it's a job, and they take it more seriously.
Yeah, no, for sure. And there's obviously reasons to just like not really freak out about stuff like that. And I would like Duvall, and I think he could be available for them. But I think if Gordon's a guy you can get for just the first, maybe do it. But again, they could, with like guys like that, they could take back bad money and get them for cheaper, or they could just take them into space for a pick and not have to send out any money. Like, there's a lot of options with the second draft guys because their rookie deals are low. But I understand why it's harder to do.
So, if the Pacers could, I'm going to go back on the point guard thing real quick. If the Pacers could trade Collison and take on Kemba without taking on any money, would you do it?
Oh, yeah. Well, what are the assets I have to go?
First-round pick. You have a first-round pick, and you have to give up Collison, but then you can get Kemba without taking on any money.
Just Collison for Kemba? Yeah, I'd do that.
Okay. But you would have to do it. It was that trade the guy proposed to us on Twitter with the Nuggets, where maybe they would take that.
Oh, that was clever, actually. Yeah. Denver would never do that, but that was actually pretty clever.
So why wouldn't Denver do that?
Because they give up a first and a decent young player.
But if Denver, I guess, how bad does Denver want to win this year? That's the question.
I don't know.
That's, yeah, you have to balance
pretty
that.
Bad, probably, because they'll get Millsap back. And that's
where you can take advantage of teams the best, is when they really want to win.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Teams that are like mediocre, that aren't really going to win a title, but want to win a first round series, they're going to give up. They're going to pay a premium for guys. That's why Collison might be worth the trade, just because he's probably not worth the first round pick of most years, but right now he is.
Yeah, and exactly. I understand that too, and he might never have these shooting percentages again either.
Yeah, but also if he's this way just for 2 years and you don't trade him, you still get great value out of him by using him.
Oh, for sure, you got great value for him on his contract. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to talk about, too, this team has really good chemistry right now. I don't know if you want to screw with that. Exactly. Just to, like, acquire a late first-round pick. I think you sort of just – you. I think you take Robinson, get Robinson back, and that's your acquisition, per se.
And the thought is, too, like, that's the point of an expiring contract, is to try to get an asset for them before they expire. So if you think you're going to bring Collison back, then you wouldn't trade him, right?
Yeah. It's Bojan is the one where I think if he had – he doesn't have any trade value as the problem, but he would be the one they would – they had to like throw in an expiring to get some kind of move. They would throw Bojan in just because I think they think
they can
replace him with Robinson at one point.
It's funny because November Bojan's probably like a $13 million player, so he was an asset. And December and January Bojan's probably like a $5 million player. So
yeah,
it's hard to trade.
And with the way Stevenson is playing and the way they think Robinson could play, he becomes less and less valuable.
Exactly.
Every day Robinson gets closer to returning, Bojan's value falls.
Mm-hmm. Not to the rest of the league, just to the Pacers.
No, to the Pacers is what I mean. Yeah, right. Not to the rest of the league.
Yeah, and he's a unique trade candidate too. Like, he got traded last year for the same reason. Like, he can contribute off the bench and be a shooter for a playoff team. The Wizards went all over that, and maybe the Heat would be a team that would want to do that, but the Heat would also only have money like Deion Waiters to trade away, which I am not at all interested in. So he's a hard guy to find a trade candidate or trade partner for.
There's not a lot of teams this year that either want a guy that could make a championship run or that think they can get there. So they're probably like, you know, that would trade a first round pick per se. Like, you're not going to be able to fleece Boston. You know, Cleveland's got too many mistakes to figure out. You know, Bowen doesn't fix anything for them, really. I mean, actually, Bowen probably great around LeBron, but it doesn't really fix anything. And then that'd be a weird way to figure it out. And then you kind of already made trades with Toronto. And so then you're looking at like the Rockets may make a move, the Spurs, but there aren't a lot of teams that like you can sort of take advantage of this trade deadline the way, you know, to gain an asset somehow. Because a lot of the teams are kind of in this limbo where like they know they can't win this year, so they aren't going to give up a lot to win a first round series. They're sort of like, we're okay with, like the Pacers, we're okay with being, you know, competitive in the first round and being out in the second round kind of thing.
Exactly. And Pacers fans seem to be hesitant to take back long term money, and I understand why, but that's how you acquire assets for these guys. So it's a tough balance.
Yeah, and the problem is you just there's not like an extremely valuable asset that's available. Like, there's not some like
right.
Oh, that point guard is going to be our guy in 3 years. We'll take on you know, we'll take on $50 million worth of money and give up everybody to get him.
Exactly.
So
it's so I want to talk about my cap theory and change maybe people's perspective a little bit on the summer coming up.
Go ahead.
Okay. So I'm going to operate under some assumptions here, and I want you to tell me if you think they're stupid, because that might change everything.
Okay.
Okay. Thaddeus Young opts in.
Okay.
They do not pick up Bojan's team option next year.
Okay.
They do not pick up Al Jefferson's team option next year.
Okay, so how much space do they have right now?
Just let me finish.
Okay.
Corey Joseph opts out.
Okay.
Okay, everyone else is on the team, including Joe Young.
Okay.
Okay, so now they have 10 players. Darren Collison, Joe Young, Oladipo, Stevenson, Thaddeus Young. Sorry, they have 9 players. Thaddeus Young, TJ Leaf, Miles Turner, Domantas Sabonis, and EK. And they have $69 million of contracts. If you add in a first-round pick at about $2 million and a roster charge for not having 12 guys, they would have about $30 million in space with no small forwards, and Joe Young is your backup point guard. So, $30 million in space sounds awesome, but you have a lot of needs. So, $30 million in space is kind of fake, because it's not like you can add some stud, because you have to address those needs before you can use your space.
Okay.
So, I think that the thought that the Pacers are going to have a ton of space this summer, while technically right, should be used more hesitantly, because you know, Glenn Robinson probably will be back, but they have, you know, is he like the best starting three ever? No. And like Joe Young is fine at backup point guard, but you need to do better than that if you want to compete at the level this team wants to. So, you know, it's a tough balance, and they have to use their money appropriately. I think the cap space is kind of fake because they will have more needs than the money will allow them to do. So I think $10 million players like Bojan and Collison are actually better moves this summer than going all in on like a really stud 3-and-D kind of guy.
So the problem is too, there aren't a ton stud 3-and-D
guys. I know. That's hard.
Yeah. Like looking at Trevor Ariza and Avery Bradley is probably the best two available you could probably get. Yeah.
So, and you know, maybe Thad opts out and that changes the entire scope of everything. Because then you do get in the $45 million range. Then you have enough money to address your needs and sign a stud. But you got to be careful when you have only 9 guys under contract and a first that you have space, but you also have to sign 4 other players. So, you know, be hesitant. So what happened to the Wizards is they had a ton of space in the summer and they didn't use it right. They just went big and now they're completely cap strapped.
Yeah. And you have to make the assumption that you're going to have to pay $35 million in 2 years to Sabonis and Turner.
Exactly. Combined. Exactly. And you have to, you know, Glenn Robinson. So like Glenn Robinson is full bird rights, right? So you can sign him after you get other players, which is great, but it's still a risk because now your team's getting expensive when you re-sign Miles and Sabonis. I don't expect them to be as splashy as Twitter seems to think.
No, I expect them to opt out of Bojan and let him walk by just replacing his money with Robinson. It's just taking Robinson right into that money and doing it for 3 or 4 years.
That sounds great. I'm all in for that.
With Thad Young, my question is what would you think if the Pacers were like, Young, opt out, but we'll give you a 3-year $30 million.
It's a Pau Gasol move. I would love that.
Because Young probably isn't worth 13, but Young has value, whether it's as a starter or eventually as a bench guy. Because he, you know, if you look at his career now, I mean, going on 10, 11 years, whatever it is now, he's basically been 13 points and 5 rebounds every night.
Yeah.
Like every year, I mean, consistently.
Well, that's the thing. Like I get the and I'm on kind of on the fence on this too. Like I get the trade Thad thought process if he's not like on the timeline, but he's so good. And like, I don't want to lose him for nothing either. And the player option makes it tricky. So I'm so on the fence on both sides of what they should do with him in the future. And I really don't care. I think both are good moves.
And he sort of does fit their timeline if they want him to be the veteran bench guy at some point.
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly.
He does. Cause he's 29. He'll be 30 this summer. He can be probably still with 3 or 4 more good, you know, years of value left.
Not so reliant on athleticism that you really worry about his aging.
Yeah, he's not, you know, he's not the guy that beat you because he's like super fast or something like that. He's the guy that beat you because he's got some like weird, he's got some really long arms and good kick moves with his feet, you know, to get open separation with his feet.
Right. But this whole theory was really to say you know, I don't know if their expiring contracts are such a huge trade asset to them, because they'd either be used to take back long-term money in a first or someone who would help them this year. And either way, that doesn't really address the fact that they have a lot of needs with their space next summer. There's a reason they have all these expiring contracts that are great, but it also means they're going to have less players on their team next year. So
yeah. I forget now. And your thing, Joseph opted in, right? Or did he opt out?
Corey Joseph opted out.
Okay.
Corey Joseph opts in, they only have about $21 million in space, but then they have literally every position covered besides backup three.
So maybe what you do next summer, instead of doing whatever the signing got long term, you just make a big splash for kind of older guy, like the JJ Redick type of deal, where you just sign a guy to a one-year deal.
I love
that. You bring in a guy to be in your playoff rotation. So, like, let's say Joseph either re-signs at like 4 for $32 million or picks up an $8 million option, it's the same number. Yep. You end up with basically the same playoff rotation, which makes
plus sense. One stud. I love that. Yeah.
Plus one stud, which is what I mean. You might already, you know, unless you lost Bojan, so you need another guy, but then you could get a better small forward that fits better for 3 and D.
What if it's like 1 for $18 million for Ariza or something like that?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. So yeah. It's the kind of guy who you think can be good for a year, but it's not going to be good. You know, maybe Redick has value still next year. I mean, seriously, maybe he has value. I mean, like, I don't think anyone's going to sign Redick to a long-term deal anymore, but maybe his value at, you throw him $18 million, he would probably come here because it's better than he'd get any other contract.
Yeah, that's not a bad theory too. And the Sixers did that to punt on their cap space. And the thing with that is if they don't give Miles an extension, then the summer after when he's a restricted free agent, it's definitely the last summer they'll have space. So it makes sense to try to operate like that.
Yeah, and so then the question also becomes, too, you got to remember in 2 years, Stevenson also is up, too. And if he's playing this well, he's going to get some offers from other teams.
Yeah, yeah.
He's going to go up. Like, he may not – he's going to go up to $8 million a year.
Then. I don't think he'd ever leave. I really don't.
No, but I think he's going to be worth – he's going to want a contract more than $5 million a year. He's going to want probably $8 million. You know, he's going to want Corey Joseph money probably.
Yeah, his next contract is freaking impossible to predict.
No, it is, because you basically tell him
his value is so much higher to the Pacers than any other team.
And I wonder if teams will be hesitant to sign him. You tell him, listen, Lance, you left last time and it was terrible. Take our 4-year $30 million deal and be happy with it.
Yeah,
and you'll be the most famous Pacer. You know what I mean? You may retire number someday type of thing.
He'd be the worst player to ever have his number retired, but he'd so deserve it. It'd be so funny.
I mean, if he played here for – so how old is he right now? He's 26, 27?
27.
So if he played here for 8 more seasons, he would have played a total of 13 to 14 seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. That could do it. The problem is you can't retire the number one. One's like you just can't retire the – like it's not a distinguished number. It's weird.
But, yeah, that's all I wanted to say about the trading and cap three stuff is like – if they have to take back a guy who has a crappy 2-year deal for next year, maybe to look two summers with that cap space or you know something like that. But it's not as exciting as it seems. So maybe moving the expirings does make some sense.
Can I throw one more scenario at you?
You can.
So think about this. So basically, I guess, based on your cap stuff, the Pacers are basically betting on Miles Turner or Sabonis or both becoming like an all-star. Right,
they're already close.
No, but they're betting on Miles Turner becoming like the only way that Pacers win the Eastern Conference. Let's say in 3 years, is Vic stays the same, and Turner suppose one of them is the starting center, close to starting center in the Eastern Conference, or that kind of level, you know, all NBA type of center. Yeah. Right, and they're betting on that.
Well, so, I think like this too, like what the other two teams or the two teams you expect to be the studs in that timeline when you want them to be good are the Celtics and the Sixers, who have Joel Embiid and Al Horford. So you have to have a center to keep up.
But if you think both, let's say you think both are going to be close to that level. Let's say, what do you think they could get for Miles Turner?
Or Sabonis.
Yeah, but let's say Turner's probably the more valuable asset. I think teams would probably.
It's the difference is the years left on their contract, and I don't know which one's worth more, but I don't know. I don't know what either of them would fetch.
Right? Like, if you could flip Turner into a point guard that you, like a top pick point guard that could be worth it.
I would never trade Turner. Absolutely. Okay.
No, I'm not trying to say I'm listen, I'm not, you're just pandering to our audience because they're going to yell at, I'm going to get yelled at for doing this.
I'm not pandering. I'm literally saying what I think. I would never.
If you really think Turner is going to be the next top three center someday, yeah, you're never going to trade that guy. But
no, I just think his style of play is more important to a championship team than Sabonis's is.
Yeah. But if you can get the number, let's say you can get Colin Sexton, then you put Sexton next to.
Then how do you get your defensive center? EK?
Well, that, or you know, Sabonis is not like the worst defender. You know, I know he's not Turner's level, but he's not the worst defender, and you figure it out somehow. But like, if you have that kind of, I guess, I mean, you know, basically then you have a younger duo of Beal and Wall almost with Depot and Texan, and maybe a better one too, a better chemistry fitting one. But
yeah, we'll talk about the Wizards in a second.
That's just, this is the way I left it. I'm just saying, you know, if Turner becomes an all NBA center, then I don't know if they actually need it like that great of a point, because they'll have two all-stars, and that's enough to them to win a conference, depending on coaching and, you know, other things falling the way. But if you keep cap flexibility, at least then you can sign the remaining pieces you need to sort of like take you to the next level, like to have a deep bench in the playoff, things like that.
Maybe I would, maybe
it's just a scenario where, you know, I'm trying to, you know, we have to think about how do the Pacers win the East. That's the goal, to win the East in 3 or 4 years. That should be the goal.
Yeah, they did the hard part, right? The hard part is getting the superstar, and they did it. They got Oladipo for 4 years, so now they have to build the pieces around him, whatever you think those are.
It's and you have to think, you know, how long will Vic, I mean, Vic relies on his athleticism a ton, which maybe he has forever. You know, we saw Westbrook can do it for now 4 or 5 straight years, but you know what I mean? So how long do you have Vic at his peak? It's probably 3 or 4 more years.
Yep.
Yep. So you got to, at some point, you got to make a real run in those 3 or 4 years.
Yep.
Same with kind of what Paul George was in his open, in his beginning.
You got to decide. Also, okay, I just want to bring this up because it's funny. And we've really strayed away from our trade deadline here, but how funny was it that Paul George nailed that clutch shot and then they lost the game anyway?
Oh, that was hilarious. Everything that Oklahoma City does when they fail is the best. I don't know about you, but they're the best.
I really think they're good, but that was funny.
But they're the best team to hate watch in the league by far.
For Pacers fans, not for me.
No, for most people. People, no, are you?
I don't know.
People don't like Carmelo. People don't like Westbrook, and people really don't like George anymore. So it's like they're the most hate-watch team for sure.
Maybe I don't know who. I don't know.
I think it's
the Cavs, but
yeah, maybe. But I think when it comes to people's opinions, you get such a contrast on both at least Carmelo and Westbrook between like guys that love them or guys that hate them to death. Like you know, LeBron, you get that. Well, I don't like LeBron, but I respect him time with crap. But you know, those two guys are like. Like people think Westbrook's overrated, triple double doesn't do well, win games, whatever. Carmelo's all care about scoring kind of things. People, they're fun to hate watch.
Yeah, but we've strayed very far from our trade deadline.
Well, we didn't. The Turner thing was a legitimate trade deadline discussion.
Yeah, I don't think they do anything.
No, they do. I was just planting the seeds for future discussions.
Should we talk about the games this week?
Let's do it.
Okay. So the Pacers open the week against my favorite team as a kid. The Washington Wizards, who scrolled too far on the screen. They are 14th in pace, 9th in offense, 14th in defense, 30-22, 4-game win streak without John Wall. The Wizards are a strange team.
They are a very strange team. Do you still write for Bolts Forever? Or are you?
Yeah, every once in a while. That's where I started my basketball writing. I'm not a fan of any team anymore. I had to talk about this on Twitter, but I did watch a lot of Wizards. I still watch the Wizards quite a bit. And Kevin Broom, a really smart stats guy who writes at Bolts Forever, pointed this out. So the Wizards were like 24th or 25th in total passes per game before Wall's injury. In the 4 games since, they have been first by a lot, like 20 passes a game. So they're really moving the ball with Satoransky in the starting lineup, and they've won 4 in a row pretty convincingly. And so it's impossible to tell if this injury is actually like hurting them or helping them, and they've been pretty good.
Hasn't Beal been playing a lot of point guard for them too?
No, it's been Satoransky a lot, and he's actually been very solid. He was really good in their game Saturday for you listeners against the Orlando Magic. He was really good.
Okay, so he's been there starting. He's listed as a small forward, but yeah.
Yeah, he's not.
Sorry, I have not caught them since the Wall injury because I just haven't had time to. But Beal's been kind of – basically, we've waited to see what he would look like when he had his own offense around him, kind of like let him kind of control things, because there's always been that debate. Well, is Wall better than Beal? And they paid Wall $40-something million. I think they gave him the designated player extension that PG didn't get. So, and this is what you're seeing when you kind of build around Wall. I know they played besides outside the Thunder, they played the Magic. I think they played the Hawks. So they haven't had like a terrible schedule. You know, they're 4 games. I guess the Raptors and Thunder are pretty good. So, I mean, but they played the Hawks too in the Magic. So, but you have to imagine this team can't keep this up, but they've been playing really well without Wall.
They're passing well. Yeah, and they're just different. And I think they're really solid, but I think without Wall, the Pacers clearly have, you know, it's definitely a big shot of winning, especially at home. It's just they've played very different without Wall, so it's hard to use, like, their stats from the whole season to really predict what's going to happen in this game.
Also, it's critical. If the Pacers win this game, they will probably be the 3 or 4 in the East.
Yeah, they're right on, like at the time, not at the end, but yeah.
Well, if they win, they will. If they win, they'll be up there.
Right at that time of the game, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Not yeah. They will be in the record wise. They will be one right. of the top three teams in the East, which is crazy.
Crazy. Yeah, and the you know what else is crazy? They even played the Wizards in literally a calendar year, a conference opponent. The last time they played was February 14th, 2017.
It's because they were busy playing the Pistons like 12 times. The scheduling is terrible this year.
It has been weird.
There must be like issues with like where like you can't play Bears Live for certain weekends or somewhere certain weekends, and that's why. I mean, I think what also happened is they're playing in the Joe Louis Arena this year, right? They are. They're the new one. So that probably threw things off because they have to share with the hockey team. So the schedule's been really bad.
Yeah. All right. Let's back to this Wizards game, though. I think the key matchup is obviously Bradley Beal versus Victor Oladipo, two stud all-star shooting guards.
Yeah. Do you think Beal is better than Oladipo at this point?
They're really close, and it depends what you like more. You know, I think Beal's a little not the stats don't show this, but I think Beal's a little bit better of a shooter. But I think Vic's a better creator and attacker, and I think Oladipo's definitely a better defender. So, you know. Preference and all that, they're really close. But,
yeah, they're both really stud players, and it'll be fun to watch them match up against each other.
Yeah, Beal's got more of a pure stroke, put it that way. He's more of like I think his comp was like Klay Thompson coming out of Florida, or maybe Klay Thompson wasn't good yet, so maybe not. But he's that kind of way he reminds me more of a Klay Thompson without the defense. But, yeah, they're about the same level. I wonder if they'll be guarding each other.
Awesome.
I don't know if they'll put – Oladipo on Beal. They like to play Oladipo off on like the kind of the guy they can kind of who can roam around on defense just because he's really good at Oladipo's really good at roaming around and kind of cutting off lanes. But interesting to see if they guard each other because that's basically probably I guess that's the number one, number two shooting guard. And well, you throw DeRozan there, but that's like the two of the best three shooting guards in the East right now.
Yeah, they've both been really good this year. Both deserved All Stars, so it'll be really fun to watch. And without Wall, Beal's obviously my butcher, just because, like I said, he can stroke the three. He's actually better than you think at getting to the rim, but a lot of that's because he's on this Wizards team who has the best screener in the NBA and Marcin Gortat, and he's a guy you're gonna have to watch out for because you know Turner and Sabonis are gonna have their hands full guarding his screens. He is so good at it.
Yeah, that's gonna be probably the matchup to watch is Turner trying to guard against Gortat, trying to either not get completely just destroyed on the rim or by him because Turner seems to not be able to take on kind of the big guy, those kind of like more traditional big centers that just like stand on the basket and rebound all the time. I remember Steven Adams crushed Turner.
Crushed him. My God.
So that's kind of what Gortat feels like to me, that kind of player. He's obviously not as good as Adams, but that's going to be interesting to watch to see if they can stop any of that. But I would remember Gortat just being a killer for the Pacers just from past, you know, the past 2 or 3 years. He would destroy them down low because he would get offensive rebound after offensive rebound and putbacks, and it would just be terrible.
Yeah, he's an 8 rebounds a game kind of guy this year, and screening cannot be understated. I wish there was a stat for it, but there is screen assists, and he leads the league in those. He's just super good down inside, so he can't really defend in space, though, so I think Turner's more likely to be a matchup problem for him than Sabonis, but
hopefully.
It's impossible to predict those because they seem to alternate good games. But
yeah, because it seemed like Turner was going to do that against Howard on Friday, and he never could, really.
You think Vic's the most likely to have a good game since Beal's not the greatest defender?
Yeah, I think the Wizards' bench was already not great coming into the year, and now that they have to
– Yeah, they're very strapped in.
Their bench is, like, not that great, and I think it could – I mean, that's where you're going to have to maybe push ahead. So, I mean, this could be a nice Lance. I mean, I think a lot of it – Vic plays a lot with the bench guys, especially – and Vic plays the entire first most of the time. So he gets a nice like 4-minute run with the bench guy at the end. So maybe that's where he gets his like makes his big push. But I think that's something to watch for is just how if the Pacers bench can be a +5, maybe 10, that might be able to win the game for them by a decent amount.
Mike Scott's been huge for the Wizards this year off the bench. He's been shooting like unbelievably well. I don't know if you know his percentages. He's 43% from deep and 56% inside the arc. So really, really good shooting this year. He has the flu, so he might not play. And that would completely change everything because that makes their bench even worse. It'd be like Tim Frazier, Mahinmi. Kelly Oubre is really good. But Tim Frazier and Mahinmi and Jody Meeks, who's been terrible, like they would not have much to do on the bench without him especially.
Mike Scott is the guy who has the emoji tattoos, and he's the guy who the Pacers. Now, 3 years ago, he played for the Atlanta Hawks and killed the Pacers in game 5 of that first round series. Yeah. With like seemed like 20 first half points, if not more. Just yeah, his fans
can remember his shooting percentage at one point this year was like over 70%. He's been really good, but right now it's only 65%, which is still freaking believable. But
and maybe hopefully the Indianapolis cold weather is not going to make him feel better. Hopefully, he'll still have the flu.
No, I want him to feel better, but the Pacers have a much better chance of winning if he's sick.
Yeah, I don't know how long the flu lasts, to be honest, anymore, because it's been
a lot of people are getting this year. Flu season is rampant.
Yeah, so who knows if he'll play? I imagine. 2 days is probably enough. He'll probably play by Monday.
Yeah, I'd guess too. It's hard to say. But no. we're grasping at straws here. Yeah, Vic's a good bet to have a good game because of Beal's defense. And I think when you're matched up against another all-star, it just makes you want to play to the other level. But if not, the bench guys, you know, Mahimi's a pretty good defender despite his shortcomings in a lot of things. But, you know, Sabonis could be a good bet. And Mahimi fouls a ton this year. And then anyone else that, like Corey Joseph, you know, anyone could really do well off the bench.
Mahimi's always fouled a ton.
I know.
Back from his Pacer days. This is a game where Jefferson could get some minutes.
Yes, it is.
Because Mahimi is a traditional center, and so is Gortat. There's not any, like, you know, stretch guy out kind of center. But, yeah, Mahimi is good to see him again, I guess. He's a very, very well-paid backup center.
He was really good the 1 year before he got that money. And he's entire career. But
it's amazing how there's a lot of Pacer players that – have really good year with the Pacers and get paid and all of a sudden fall off like this. Something about Indiana. Solomon Hill, Lance,
yeah.
People like to think Indiana's a joke, but they have a good system, and I think they prove it by the guys that stay do well and guys that don't stay. Maybe it's a lesson you try to teach to Glenn Robinson. It's like, hey, you know, you've been playing well here. People leave here and they start to stink, so
yeah,
you should stay. But, I mean, what do you think about Bojan's prospects?
Yeah, well, Otto Porter's pretty good defender and a really good shooter, but
I wonder if Otto Porter guards Oladipo though.
Maybe that is not a bad thought. That would make some sense.
So
I don't know. Yeah, that's a good thought. I don't know. And Satoransky's a really big point guard too, so they could even put Beal on Collison and put Satoransky on Oladipo.
Yeah, so something to watch because the Pacers against Saturday against the 76ers was they played Bojan on the point guard, so they played Bojan on Ben Simmons and they let Collison. Yeah, I think Collison guarded Covington. Or Redick.
Austin guarded Redick, yeah.
Redick, and then they put Depot on Covington. I was trying to remember how they flipped it. Yeah. But so
it worked really well.
No, it worked. It was a good last time they didn't do that, so it was a nice McMillan made a coaching change or just you know, it was good kind of counterpunch. And I wonder if they do that again with Satoransky just because he's kind of that kind of huge point guard type of style. But he's not nearly level Simmons is getting to the rim, so I don't know if he's scared as much as you know, with Simmons, you want to put a body in for him just because you know he just can run over Collison. But Bojan, he couldn't run over. I don't know if they do that again, though.
Yeah, I don't know. There's like opportunity for it, given that Beal's really good and Satoransky's really big. But that'll be something to watch out for. I don't know what they're going to do for that.
Yeah, and I just think, like you said, the matchup really is to watch. If Depot does guard Beal, it's first of all how taxing that is for him on the defensive end, and whether can lead help, you know, whether he can score enough on offensive end because he'll have to be playing such hard defense. But you know, Beal's the kind of guy who gets 20 every night. It feels like and. So it was kind of Depot, so who knows?
He had 50-something against the Blazers during the year. When he gets hot, he's a stud.
Yeah, and he's one of the few guys in this league who him and McCollum are kind of those kind of guys who are like, maybe aren't kind of guys that are going to get you like 30 every night, but can go for 50 or 60 just randomly.
They're really similar players, like, in general.
They are. Beal, I think, is better. Beal's got more size.
Yeah, I think CJ's a better shooter, and Beal's better at everything else.
Yeah, something to note, too. Last year, the Pacers played the Wizards, and they won.
Bad young buzzer beater.
Yep. How do you, I think right was it? He's right-handed, right? But he shot it left-handed. I think was how he did it.
He shot it righty.
Whatever it is, I forget which hand he shoots from because he uses both all the time. Yeah. So that's awesome. And that was that. Beal was great in that game. So you know, that's the last memory in Indiana. So maybe
you're getting my live reaction to Terry Rozier just hitting a game winner against the Portland Trail Blazers.
Rozier did it again.
Pretty sweet. Yeah. Well, there's 13 seconds left, but it could end up being the game winner.
I hate the Celtics.
Come on. I don't hate the Celtics, but I do feel like they get some ridiculous contributions from some nobodies. So shout out to Brad Stevens.
Yeah, I also think they get like so much praise where like they haven't won anything yet. Yes, they've got a lot of good, but they haven't won anything yet. They've made to one Eastern Conference Finals and they have all this smoke blowing up their butt.
You want to do the Pels and then get out of here? This is a really long episode.
Yeah, I know. We're probably going on over an hour already.
Yeah.
Sorry, everybody out there.
Sorry, we wanted to do the trade stuff, and we're only doing half the games anyway. So the Pelicans, they already beat the Pacers once, but they had who was going to be an all-star starter, DeMarcus Cousins, who is now out for the year. That changes everything. They just acquired Nikola Mirotic, though, and he could end up – this could end up being his first game, actually.
No, he played a game. It's whether he starts or not.
Did he really play? He played? Okay, I missed that. But they just acquired Mirotic, so they're a different team, so it's kind of hard to say what they're going to be. Hopefully we can get a Pelicans guy to come talk more about them on later in the week. But Anthony Davis is just so good that he scares me.
Yeah, so while I have not watched the Wizards, I have a roommate who's a Timberwolves fan, so I have watched the Pelicans because they play the Timberwolves.
Four times, yep.
Well, they played them the last game. That's when Mirotic played.
Yeah. Yep.
I can't remember. Was it last night they played?
Yes.
Or was it Friday? Okay. It was last night. I'm blaming because I was switching to the Pacer game and watching a little bit of that game with my roommate. But so Mirotic played a ton of minutes, is what I remember from it. And two, I wonder if he starts this next game because
Damian Lillard and one.
Okay.
Sorry.
It's Blazers.
Blazers Celtics 96-95 Blazers, 7 seconds to go.
All right, guys, this is a great live by live play of a podcast. We'll be posted on Monday, which means you will know the final score when this is being played. So Davis.
You guys know that I literally have games on in the background while we talk.
Oh, I know you do. I don't care. You can be fine. I had a point though. Okay, the Pelicans are first of all already had a really bad bench. There was one of them that had just a terrible bench. That's what like was holding them back. They had, you know, they have two of the best eight players, but they were only won 28 games, which is because they have a bad bench. So losing Boogie was like huge. And then this Davis, who doesn't really like to play center, has been because they traded away Omerachi, so they don't have any centers anymore. That's what they signed Okafor basically because the Pelicans have no more centers because they had three and now they have Davis is like the one. So that's also what something to watch for is Davis at center, because if they even start Mirotic, he'll be at power forward. So I don't, I wonder how Davis is, but Davis took 30 shots in the last game too. I mean, their whole starting unit was a minus like 19, 17, 15, minus 18. Like they're just not that, they don't really have that many good players, to be honest. I mean, they've got like Jrue Holiday, Davis, and Mirotic basically right now, and maybe Etuan Moore and Rondo if he's playing decent.
Yeah, they're very, very shallow, and they had to make a move like that to do cost-cutting stuff to get Mirotic. Hopefully he can help them a little bit. And they were really banking on Greg Monroe, too, who they did not end up getting. So it's going to be interesting to see how they operate going forward. But, yeah, they're a weird team, and I kind of like the Mirotic-Davis fit, so I kind of do worry about those two. But other than Jrue Holiday, no one scares me in their guard or wing rotation. Darius Miller, I don't know if he starts, actually, but he plays the three for them about half – the time, 24 minutes a game. He is shooting ridiculous amounts of threes. He shoots 4.5 a game and makes 43% of them. So, Al Horford just scored. Oh,
and they won.
And the Celtics win 97-96. Okay, there we go.
All right, great play. But another reason to hate Boston, too, is they signed Raymond Monroe for some reason. I don't like Boston because
Horford fadeaway. That was nice.
All right, cool. Well, this is great because that game happened yesterday, Tony, because it's supposed to go on Monday.
Sorry. Carry on.
So Mirotic played 35 minutes off the bench, which means they just like they needed him basically when they played. I'm like, you don't usually the first game you play, you don't play 35 minutes when you're with a new team. But he was being effective at least. I mean, they don't have a lot. So this should be an easy win for the Pacers, to be honest, unless they just like Davis goes for like 60, which is not out of the question. It's not.
But, he's a stud.
But maybe you let Davis just get his. Like Davis took 30 shots against the Timberwolves, so maybe you let him do that.
So here's a question: who do you think guards Anthony Davis?
Turner for sure.
You think so?
Maybe that. Yeah, no. That's the question. It depends if they actually start Mirotic or they started Cunningham last time at power forward.
No, they played Cousins. Remember?
No, not last game.
Last night. Sorry.
Last time they played.
Yeah, last time the Pacers played or last time the Pelicans played?
That's when the Pelicans played. They started Cunningham at power forward, I believe.
They did play Cunningham. I'll just click and see because that would be easier. It was Jrue Holiday, Rajon Rondo, Etuan Moore, Dante Cunningham, Anthony Davis.
So it was Cunningham. Yep. Okay, so in that instance, you probably don't want to put Thad Turner on Cunningham, just even though Thad gets lazy sometimes on guarding the perimeter guys somewhat. I just don't think you want to do that necessarily, but also this is kind of game where you could see a quick trigger of by Turner bring in Sabonis because he can bang with him a little better. But I don't know. I think Turner can hold his own maybe a little bit against Davis.
Yeah, and they play. It depends kind of what role they have him in because he's like an okay shooter, but not from three. So it's I think Turner makes the most sense. I asked to see what you would say, and he doesn't stretch it out so far that you worry about Turner being too far from the rim. So I'd probably put Turner on him, but I understand the argument either way.
Your only argument for not putting Turner there is because you would then draw Turner to double team him every time.
Well, and if it's Mirotić, I'd probably go Turner on Davis for sure. But if it's,
yeah, Mirotić, you're not print. Mirotić killed him twice or once this year already with another team. He's not going to do it again.
Right.
Or at least
right.
They think he's not going to do it again. But if you think about it, right, maybe if you think you're just going to double team Davis every time he gets the ball, you put Young on him and let Turner rove and block him.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. That's the thing to watch, though, is who guards Davis. And he's going to play probably 40 minutes. So
play 36 against the Timberwolves.
Yeah, him and Giroux play absurd minutes because, like you said already, their bench is horrid. So they have to get what they can out of those guys if they want a prayer of winning. And are they on a back-to-back? Because I would – nope, they're not. Okay. Because that would have made me think they were going to win for sure. But, yeah, Solomon Hill doesn't play. Frank Jackson doesn't play. They're really, really strapped for minutes anywhere they can get it. So should be interesting to see if depth wins or if talent wins.
Do you think Rondo guards Oladipo?
No, probably Giroux. He's a lot longer and taller.
Okay. Well, Rondo's got really long arms, though. Rondo's a better defender, right? Is Rondo a better defender than Giroux?
In the playoffs. Maybe not in the regular season.
Yeah. That's true. 100% true. So this could be a game.
Rondo's an awesome player.
This could be a game where Depot has a nice 30 points.
Yeah. 30 points. No one can guard. None of their guards can play a lick of defense. So
also, this could be the kind of game where Collison, Depot, and Bogdanović just feast all night and they just share the scoring load.
Bogdanović, why do I feel like he played well against him the first time?
Well, the first time, remember, they led 71-59 at half and they lost it. It was in that stretch of games where they kept blowing leads in the fourth quarter because they would slow down or something like that. It was like a big deal, but they figured it out, obviously.
Yeah, I don't have the box score up for this game. I wish I did.
It was 117-112.
Yeah, I found the score. I just want to see who did well. Yeah, Bojan had 14 on 6-9 shooting. Victor was not good in that game. 15 points, 6-17. Okay. Interesting.
I don't think Rondo. I think that team had totally different. I don't think Rondo
didn't play. Game. No, he was still injured. And Tony Allen and Jameer Nelson both played over 20 minutes, and they're both not on the team anymore.
Yeah. So this Pelicans team is completely different. I mean, this is what happens when you play a team only twice a year and you play them like 3 months apart.
Right.
They change. It happens.
But that's how it should be.
No, that's how it should be for sure. But yeah, it's just what happens, you know. And this Pelicans team is disappointing because I think, you know, it's hard for big guys to come back from Achilles injury, so it really sucks to happen to Boogie because they looked like pretty good, and they might have been able one more piece, and they could be a contender.
And I'm rooting for the strategy of the two post player move, so I'm sad.
Yeah, there's just not a lot of history of a guy tearing his Achilles and coming back and playing well.
So
hard.
All right, I'm out of the box score from the first game now. Cousins and Davis combined 8 of 15 from three. That's not going to happen again. That's good news. Davis was really good. If I recall, he had like 36, 37. So that's definitely something to watch. But, you know, it all comes down to Davis. It really does.
And he's killed the Pacers before, not just this season, but last season. I think the only time he had a 40-point game, I mean, he's killed them. This is the kind of game where Turner's got to – if Turner guards him, he's got to step up and really – I'm not saying shut him down, but maybe hold him to – 50% shooting.
I'd be okay with playing Al a bit in this game and just like fouling Davis a ton.
But isn't Davis a good free throw shooter?
Good question. I think he's like 70%.
He's
82. I take it back. Never mind.
Yeah,
Don't do that.
Give him free points. Davis is the most, probably one of the most complete big men in the league.
He's a stud.
Yeah, he's a stud. He's the guy who you can win a championship with if you get the right roster in him. If you flip Davis and Turner right now, Pacers win a championship, maybe.
He's averaging 27-10. Like, how is he not?
Could you imagine that, though? If you flip Miles Turner for Anthony Davis, Pacers could win a championship.
Like, yeah, I'd throw everything at him. I would love that.
That's what I'm saying. If Davis is going to leave Pacers, that's a move you can make.
I would love that. I would literally give up anything not named Victor Oladipo for him.
Yeah. All right, that was just a thought. Just saying that's kind of move. It could be out there someday. Just saying for the Pacers.
Anyway, yeah, let's do scores.
Yeah, let's do it.
We'll try to have. Sorry, that was our Wizards preview. Officially, I do watch enough of them that I feel confident in the things I said. But we'll try to have a Pelicans guy on to talk more about that game because they are a way different team than the first time we played.
Yeah, and we'll have a Wizards review on Tuesday.
Tuesday.
And so, we'll do the rest of the games on Thursday.
Given that Wall's out, I know I said that the Wizards are playing better, but it can't last forever, like you said. I think they're going to beat the Wizards, but I don't know how high scoring it'll be. They play a lot slower without Wall, so let's go 101-94.
That's really low scoring for the Pacers.
They just won 192 against the Philly.
Yeah, on a back-to-back, though.
It's true. Both teams on a back. That's true.
Yeah, that's why it was so low. I'm thinking Thinking 108-100.
Okay. Yeah, I like the win there. I don't know why. It just feels right.
Yeah, that it's Patriot team. I know they kind of actually kind of stunk this week, but they feel like they may turn a corner in the Philly game. And they seem like I'm just confident in this team the way they're playing. Their chemistry is like, it just seems off the charts at this point. Maybe every team has that, but they feel like they have great chemistry and the guys like really enjoy playing with each other in a way that's kind of reminding me of like the 11-12 Pacer team with when before the, everything went to hell.
Yeah, and I hope it keeps up. Hopefully no one bangs another player's girlfriend/wife.
Yeah, the good thing is I think most of them are single, right? I mean, there's Thad Young who's not, but most of the guys seem like they're single, I'm pretty sure.
That's a Thad Young's wife too. Great lady.
Yeah. He has a great
Pelican
kid.
Score. You're up first. Pelican score.
I think they beat the Pelicans by 10.
I don't think they beat the Pelicans. I don't know why.
I think they're so strapped at this point.
I agree with that.
Players, and I think the Pacers have hit this kind of stretch where they know they need to win. Pacers want to get to 50 wins, put it that way. That's kind of maybe their goal. I'm not sure they're going to get to
it. It doesn't feel that win. I don't know why.
I don't know. It's also one of those games where I thought they were going to win this entire weekend, and they just didn't show up. I mean, they had that also ability not show up in the first quarter, and that kills them. But you would hope you would know you're going to play against Davis, and you would kind of like find a way not to let him go for 40 in the first quarter.
Yeah, that's how they win, is if he doesn't play well. I'm going to go 105-101 Pelicans, but that one, I don't know. That's a weird one. I just think Anthony Davis is a player that the Pacers cannot handle at all.
And I mean, last time they played the Pelicans, they thoroughly dominated them for three quarters.
They did.
Two and a half, yeah. But for the first half, they just whipped them up and down the court because their bench, the Pacers bench, is really actually good. Like, compared to a lot of teams, they have a pretty deep bench. I mean, with Stevenson and Joseph, they've got, and Sabonis too, you got like three guys who could start on some teams off their bench, and that killed, I mean, they killed the Hornets bench, if I remember right, or not Hornets, they killed the Pelicans bench, so they could do it again.
They did. I got nothing else if you don't.
No, we've been going on probably maybe.
This is our longest episode ever. Sorry, guys.
We're probably only at an hour 10, right? We probably didn't start till.
Yeah, we talked a little beforehand.
We went at like an hour 10 on one other one.
I would like to plug Tim Bontemps' hilarious tweet after the Celtics game that says, "Shocking that a Boston team would win a close game on Super Bowl Sunday."
Well, guys, on Monday, you're going to hear – well, no, I'll be back on Wednesday. You'll hear whether I'm depressed by Patriots win. Well, we're depressed by whoever wins the Super Bowl because neither team to win. So
I don't want either team to win either.
I'm going
to
eat a lot of food tonight, and that's going to be my goal for Super Bowl Sunday is to get a lot of good food and –
And however you're soaking for the Super Bowl, enjoy this Pacers-Wizards game tonight. You can follow Adam at FriedmanAdam5. You can follow me at TEastNBA. You can follow the podcast, which is over the 300-follower mark. Thank you all at Locked On Pacers. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. We'll be back to recap the Wizards game tomorrow.